sweep shot. Big shot. That's six.
That's clipped square of the wicket. Punches the air at the far end. A wonderful innings that from Joe Clark.
There's nothing quite like winning a trophy with your mates from your home club, some of whom you've been through thick and thin with over a long period of time.
Beauty. A dipping slower ball. Outstanding. He absolutely nailed it first up.
This is the Talk of Trent Bridge. I'm Matt Freeman, and I'm joined this week on the podcast by Harry Gurney as the Outlaws' left armer makes his final preparations for a summer of white ball cricket. As the season draws ever nearer, Gurney shares some of his favourite memories from pre-season trips of years gone by.
We'd been on tour and then we went rafting, or I think they call it white water rafting. I will never forget Samit clinging onto a fence post sticking out the water or something, just screaming help at the top of his voice. But also Luke Fletcher's reaction. I've never, ever seen anyone laugh so hard.
We also hear how he feels lucky to have been able to pursue the sport he loves for so long.
I have, throughout my career, found myself stood out there on the field and thought to myself, what on earth am I doing here? How am I, professional sportsman? It's been just such an incredible journey. I'm so lucky and honoured. I'm sure most of my colleagues would probably agree.
And we'll hear from Joe Clark and Ben Duckett as they return from a period of warm weather training in South Africa and enter the final stretch of prep for the new campaign.
It's been nice to sort of just dedicate my training to specific stuff and also become closer to a lot of the lads in the team. I think that will stand us in good stead because, the closer we are off the field, the more we'll sort of work for each other on it.
But first, Harry shared a pretty controversial reason why he didn't appear on last week's podcast with Jake Ball, Peter Trigo, Matt Carter and Ovi the dog.
Last week I was invited to come on and not a big fan of dogs, to be honest.
Really?
I wouldn't say I hate them or I dislike them or I'm scared of them or anything like that. I'm just indifferent about them. I'll never get one. They smell, they're noisy, they excrete on your living room carpet.
Not if you teach them not to, I think.
Yeah, it still happens during the potty training. Mm. Not the potty training, whatever you call it, the dogs.
You've not had a dog, have you?
No. During the training phase, and then even after the training phase, as you found out last week, which wasn't aired, when Carter's dog had a little accident under the table. And when you go on holiday, you have to get people to look after it. You have to walk it twice a day. No way.
But what? On the positive side of what happened last week, this room smells delightful at the minute because it's been cleaned to within an inch of its life. There's a nice sort of lemony.
Yeah, I don't know whether the smell was created by Matt Carter or his dog, to be fair. But
well, did you not have a childhood pet? Was there anything you had growing up?
We had a cat called Gloria.
Gloria?
Mm. Okay? She was cool.
Yeah, was the cat more your sort of thing?
Well, yeah, I like cats. Low maintenance. Leave a bit of food in the corner. Go on holiday, whatever, they're fine.
The cat's not bothered, though, is it? To the cat, you are just like where some food comes from. There's not an emotional
they're
thing.
They're arrogant, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
And they like prowl around just looking down at you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one thing I do like about dogs. I can see the appeal is the loyalty thing. They're always happy to see you and they love you unconditionally.
Well, we've got you here now, which is
something. I'm here.
Are you sort of on your own kind of individual pre-season rather than with the rest of the team? So I suppose different timings for when you're playing.
Yeah, I am, and it's one of my favourite things about having retired from red ball cricket, to be honest. I mean, I've been playing cricket since I was sort of 10 to 23 years ago, but even since becoming involved with the Leicestershire age groups and then the academy and onto the pro staff and then moving here, I've done a lot of county winters, and it is hard work. It is really hard work, and it can become a bit monotonous, to be honest, particularly by this time of year. So this year is a little bit different for the Knox boys here. They've got the tent, which is great. It means they can get outside and we can get outside and do a bit of practice when a lot of other counties are probably in an indoor hall somewhere still. So that's great. But I'm sort of on my own programme and ticking over on my own, which has huge advantages. It allows me to manage my own days, my own time. It allows me to spend more time with my family and spend a lot of time focusing on my business. What it does mean is that you need a fair amount of self-discipline to make sure that you are preparing yourself professionally for these competitions, because I haven't got a coach breathing down my neck telling me I've got to do this and that testing, or I'm going to do this and that exercise or this session or whatever.
Yeah, how do you spur yourself on for that? Because I mean, as someone who's not as motivated to do things like that, I'd find it really easy just to do a few minutes and think, oh, I've done now, and not sort of have anyone to push me on.
I think you, as your cricket career goes on, or it's probably the same for other sports, any professional career, you, once you get to the age of 30 or more, and I'm 33 now, you sort of know what you need to do to keep your body in a good enough condition to perform at the level that you perform at in the sport that you perform in. So I know how I like to train, and then again is another advantage of it. I get to train exactly how I want to. You know, Alex Hales is a good example. He loves tennis, and that forms a huge part of how he trains, but traditionally that wouldn't form a big part of a county pre-season or a county winter program. But Alex gets, you know, good cardio work out of that, great agility, hand-eye coordination, and it keeps him in great nick, and that a lot, you know, supplemented with a bit of a routine in the gym to keep yourself ticking is what works for him. And I've got my routines as well.
Yeah. What's your tennis? What's your thing that you do that maybe you wouldn't do in a normal setup?
Probably for me, I like stamina. So long distance kind of stuff. So a watt bike or a treadmill or whatever. I like that to form a large part of my program. I think the modern cricketer does an awful lot of heavy weight lifting and Olympic lifting. That isn't my cup of tea. I don't personally believe in it. Really, I don't think everyone's different, but certainly for me personally, I don't think it works. I've tried it in my younger years. Mine's based around sort of stamina stuff as much as anything. I do a lot of yoga. Yoga forms a big part. The flexibility side of yoga forms a big part of my preparation for all training and match days.
As we're sat here at the minute, most of the squad are off at, I think, Cranwell. I don't know if it's an RAF base, an army base, something like that. So I suppose the gym's pretty quiet this morning. But was that not something you were keen on?
Well, unfortunately, I didn't get an invite.
Really?
But I'm secretly quite pleased because I'd imagine they're crawling through icy rivers and building rafts and abseiling and all that kind of stuff, which... for any listeners that know me will know that isn't particularly up my street. I'm much more comfortable sat in front of my computer poring over a spreadsheet or something like that. I'm a bit of a geek.
Have you ever been on one of those kind of team bonding exercises? Has there been some in the past?
Yeah, one pre-season we'd been on tour, and then we went rafting, or I think they call it white water rafting, on the River Trent just over here at Lady Bay. And so we're all in these rafts going down. It was one of those things that you sort of, we were all dreading before, but once we were in the boat, it was a huge amount of fun. And the instructors would take it down, and there were five or six of us in each boat or whatever, and you're leaning to try and steer it through the obstacles and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, the last time round, essentially the instructors ensured that every boat capsized. And you were told to keep your legs straight, arms down by your side, and flow down the river feet first until eventually you get to the bottom where there's like a catchment type pool.
Right.
And I will never forget Samit clinging onto a fence post sticking out the water or something, just screaming help at the top of his voice. And that will stick with me for the rest of my life, but also Luke Fletcher's reaction. I was in the same boat as Luke Fletcher, and we'd just got to the side and climbed out. And I've never, ever seen anyone laugh so hard. Fletch couldn't physically stand up. He was crying with laughter. It was, I'll never forget that one.
No, was anyone ever filming that? Or is that something that's just exists in your mind and no one will ever see again?
Yeah, I don't know if there is any footage of that, actually. Well, our phones were probably in a locker in the changing room somewhere, I guess, having been... I wonder if there was anyone there filming it. There might have been a film crew.
Some digging.
One of you guys, maybe. Yeah, that would be gold if you could find
incredible.
That. Other than that, the best pre-season memories for me going back are generally alcohol-related. I think, you know, when you go on a pre-season tour and you're all together in somewhere like a Barbados or a bowler's camp in Dubai or whatever, you know, I think... Obviously, you go there for cricket reasons, and you all train your asses off, and you've trained hard all winter, and it's certainly not a big stag do. But at some point during that trip, when the time is appropriate for the boys to go out together and have a night out and have a few beers and sit around and talk cricket, chew the fat, talk about what's important to them and what makes them tick, I think is really valuable, because, you know, having a little bit of alcohol involved does sort of, you lose your inhibitions and you talk more freely about things which... help to create a more honest and open and sort of accepting changing room. So that is important. There have been a few over the years, places like Barbados, as I say, and hopefully tonight at Cranwell, the guys get in the officer's mess and have a couple of beers together and do something similar.
Well, a couple of guys who are down there at the minute at Cranwell, or up there, I'm not sure where it is, are Joe Clark and Ben Duckett, who also recently returned from a trip to South Africa for a little bit of warm weather training. Alexandra Broughton caught up with them a couple of days ago to find out how their pre-season have been going so far.
It's been my first full winter in England, it was pretty daunting on me at the start of their winter. I was thinking, am I going to be right getting through it? But it's probably been my biggest learning. Personally, I think it's tough when you're playing all the time, you know, from going from the summer to the winter touring, to actually learn about yourself, not just on the field but off the field. And I've kind of learnt sort of how well I move and stuff from gymming and that side of things, and also just going away and having hours to bat in the nets and kind of picking up a few old habits that I've sort of lost recently. I've actually really enjoyed this winter. I don't want to be here all winter every single year. I wouldn't mind being in the sun playing in competitions, but it's been a massive learning thing for me, and just being able to focus on myself and, you know, in quite a selfish way, just completely do what I need to do to improve.
I'm the same. My first winter indoors, and it's been nice to sort of just dedicate my training to specific stuff. And also become closer to a lot of the lads in the team. Last year I had the first half of the winter away, and I came in for sort of 4 weeks before pre-season. And, you know, obviously I got to know everyone, but I didn't get to know everyone on a sort of personal level. So I feel like I've got, you know, some real close mates in the dressing room now, having sort of known them now for a year. And I think that will stand us in good stead, because, you know, the closer we are off the field, the more we'll sort of work for each other on it.
Obviously, members and supporters see you out on the field on a match day, but what they don't always see is the work that goes in during preparation. Can you give us an insight regarding the amount and intensity of practice and strength and conditioning work that you do?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Like, for me, it's obviously everyone, no one sees what goes on behind the scenes. I mean, I know that there's been a lot of content that have gone out this winter, sort of showing us, you know, running up Goatham Mills and doing our triathlon and stuff like that. And it's certainly been the case this winter in terms of our work ethic. You know, lads are doing extra sessions. The strength and conditioning coach Liam has put us through our paces. Every week, you know, lads are needing the weekend to recover. It's just held us in good stead going into the season, because we want to be a fit side that can compete in all three of the competitions. So it's hopefully keeps us in good stead.
Finally, I'm going to ask you to talk about each other now. Tell us what you like about each other as cricketers and why you're glad to be on the same team.
You go.
I played with Ben with England under 19s and England Lions, and, you know, I saw what he was capable of doing, and he was always someone when I played for Worcester, when we always used to play against Northants, he was always the person that we'd end up talking about the most, our bowlers anyway, because of the way he played, the fact that he can hit the ball in weird positions, but everywhere around the ground. So he was someone that our bowlers hated bowling against, and as a team we didn't like playing against, because we know how dominant he was for that side he was in, and when he was on, he was on, and he could really hurt us.
Thanks.
Is that right?
That is lovely.
Those lovely words.
Yeah, I mean, I could literally say the exact same thing, but what I love about Clarkie is sort of the confidence he has as a person, the way that you go about your cricket, and, you know, you've improved since you were 17. I know what you're like then. He's an arrogant little so-and-so, but he's got the balance right now. But I think for me, it's, you know, I think you've got more hundreds and fifties. And for someone that's got that kind of conversion rate, shows that sort of when they go in, when they get in, they go on to get big scores, and that's exactly what Clarkie does. And, you know, we saw that last year. Obviously, it was a tough year for you, and you know, you still scored 400s and nearly two in two games. The confidence you go away about your cricket, the way that you can turn a game on ahead, and the hundreds you score, I think, are crucial. And yeah, I think if you keep going, boy, you'll be beating the England side, so keep going.
That's Joe Clark and Ben Duckett talking to Alexandra Broughton a couple of days ago. It's the Talk of Trent Bridge podcast with Harry Gurney, my guest this week, and we've had an email in. We got an email into the office this morning, which mentions you somewhere down there, because you've helped this guy, I think. There's a man, Simon Morgan, who's going for the world record fastest half marathon in cricket gear. So, how do you fit into this? How's this come about?
Well, firstly, it makes a change in email in referring to me as complaining about one of my tweets, which is quite nice. I thought that's what you were going
to
say.
We had to convene a meeting in case it wasn't. So that was fine.
It was. He is a cousin of the head chef Paul Thacker at one of my pubs, the Tap and Run in Upper Broughton. So Paul sort of hooked us up. I met Simon. He's as mad as a box of frogs. He does all sorts of stuff. He's in the Guinness Book of Records as well a couple of times already.
And, what's he done already? Do you know?
I think him and Paul between them made the biggest ever custard cream. That was one thing.
I think I looked up his Twitter page, and that's on his bio, and I thought that was just nonsense, like inventor of the largest custard cream. That's a thing.
Yeah, I might actually get them to redo that at the Tap and Run. Good PR, isn't it, really? And also
it's a nice biscuit as well.
Yeah, and if I get Fletch there and Brendan, I'll get Brendan Taylor over from New Zealand as well. They should polish it off pretty quickly, I reckon. I don't know what they have for their main course, but that could get them started, couldn't it?
It certainly could. So you've lent some gear to Simon. Do you know how it's going? Do you know if he's going to be close to that record?
No, I don't know, to be honest. I don't know what the time is, but
it's 1:40, which sounds sharp to me for a half marathon in gear,
in full pads. He asked me for some pads. I couldn't find any, so I had to raid the cupboard, the generic kit cupboard at Trent Bridge. So if anyone's missing a pair of green GM pads out of the squad, they'll have to let me know. He's flying the flag for Nottinghamshire in a Notts helmet and green pads. And yeah, I mean, just must be mad, but all for an amazing cause.
I suppose your running in cricket gear will have been relatively limited, so 13 miles of it is quite something.
Yeah, I mean, I dealt in boundaries, to be honest. Didn't really tend to rotate the strike too much. Count on one hand the amount of threes I ever ran in my career. I'm still playing. You don't see me back too much in T20 cricket, which is not a bad thing.
Well, good luck to Simon. He's doing it all for Prostate Cancer UK. Now, something we've asked a few of the people we've had on recently as well is about what they'd have done if they weren't a cricketer. That hadn't worked out for them, that hadn't been the route they'd gone down, what would you have done? We had a fairly sort of varied range of answers. But I suppose for you growing up, if it had not been this, what would it have been?
Ooh, that is a good question. I think I probably would have... you probably had this one. I'd still be single. Was that one?
We've not had that from anyone else.
That was... I think it was that Peter Crouch.
That's a Peter Crouch line. Yeah. It was slightly different to that.
Yeah, yeah. What would I be doing? I would be... I probably would be in London doing something in finance, I would imagine. Investment banking or insurance or working in a fund or, I don't know, something like that. I did economics at uni and always felt sort of drawn to London and professional services, I guess. But the way things have turned out, obviously, I wouldn't change anything. I've been living the dream, really, for the last 15 years now.
Yeah, it's two very different paths, isn't it? You know, I mean, some people we've had in, I think Mulaney was one of them, talk about rugby league, and there's people who talk about other sports. But it could hardly think of anything more different than that as another choice, really.
Yeah, it's funny. It's... I have always sort of felt a bit of an imposter. I think it's quite common with pro sportsmen, probably, or pro sports people, to have this imposter syndrome. But I have, throughout my career, you know, found myself stood out there on the field and thought, what on earth am I doing here? How am I, you know, professional sportsman? But it's been just such an incredible journey. I'm so lucky and honoured to have met the people I've met, played with and against the people I have, and travelled to the places that I have. The game's just been amazing to me, and you know, it owes me nothing, and I think I'm sure most of my colleagues would probably agree.
So Mike, was it Michael Hussey's line about you being an accountant on commentary wasn't sort of a million miles away from where you might have been?
No, exactly. And I've got the physique of an accountant. I always say that. So physique of an accountant and maybe the brain of one, but fortunately for me, I lob a few back of the hand slower balls down and it seems to do the trick sometimes.
Now, just before we finish, I also want to talk about sporting heroes, which is another thing we've asked quite a few people about, as to when they were thinking about picking up a bat and ball, who it was that inspired them, whether it was a pro, whether it was someone you knew at home, who it was that really made being a cricketer feel like a thing for you. I mean, who was it for you, really?
No one, really. I don't know if I'm in a minority on this or not, but I don't have a cricketing hero. I didn't have a cricketing hero. I growing up, was obsessed with cricket. You know, I think I was introduced to it at the age of about 10. And as is probably common in the Notts changing room, you know, from that age, I can remember getting up at 3-4 o'clock in the morning to watch England touring India and Pakistan, and staying up all night to watch them playing in Australia, and just completely obsessed. I just wouldn't miss a ball. But there was no one particular individual, I don't think, that inspired me or that I saw as a hero. I mean, at the time that I started following, I think it was Gough and Caddick were opening the bowling for England, and I can remember watching them and admiring them and thinking they were fantastic. And then people like Hoggy came along, and I was, you know, lucky to play with Hoggy as well a little bit later on at Leicestershire. But no particular hero. I was just completely and utterly obsessed with the game. You know, I can remember at quite a young age, sort of 13, 14, summer holidays time, we're off on a family holiday. No, I'm not coming. I'm staying here. And my dad would stay behind with me, and all my mum and all my brothers would go off on holiday, and I would stay back in Leicestershire because I didn't want to miss a Loughborough Town under 13s game or really? Something like that. You know, so. And I can remember teammates of mine disappearing off for 3 weeks in the middle of the summer holidays, and I couldn't understand that mentality. There was just no way I would be prepared to do that, to miss that much cricket. And I think, as I say, that's probably common in people that end up going on to play professionally. You have to be completely obsessive about it and completely in love with it, and you need some luck along the way as well.
That's a good commitment from your dad as well, isn't it? If you're sort of stood on the doorstep saying, I'm not getting in the car with you, he's staying behind as well.
Yeah, although if he's anything like me, he was probably secretly happy. I think summer holidays are overrated. Yeah, in the English summer, it's sunny here. Why not stay here?
You could go to a different part of here, couldn't you?
Yeah.
The seaside.
Skeggy.
Or further away.
Just up the road.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wales, North Wales. Nice beaches there.
This might be the most controversial podcast we've done. Dogs and summer holidays are overrated.
Yeah,
definitely. Probably two things at the top of a lot of people's list of things they like.
Yeah, not big on dogs or summer holidays.
It's a controversial one, but I'll let you get back to the relatively quiet gym today.
Thank you
for joining us on the podcast.
Pleasure.
We'll be back soon with another one as well, and there's plenty more behind the scenes content, including soon some stuff from Cranwell with the rest of the squad as well, at trentbridge.co.uk.